Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. 808 and change the time. A little bit cold. Minnesota Vikings, tough one. You just heard our show. Ben Utech knows all about what it's like to go through the ups and downs in an NFL season. Been a Super Bowl champ and seen everything in between. He joins us now. He's also got a big Christmas another great Christmas concert that he's putting on in the month of December and beyond. He's just fantastic at that. We'll talk about both. Ben, happy holidays.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me, man. It's been too long.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, as we say, we'd like to do this under better circumstances, but the Viking game last night provides us a platform. You've seen it all. The team gets beat, team's in a bad funk, they fire an offensive coordinator. What's that like to be on a team that goes through that?
Transitions are never easy. You've got, you brought in a new quarterback who's, you know, let's be honest, he's still getting his feet underneath him, and he's got a lot of upside and really looking forward to his future here. But you have to question some of the play calling. I think as fans, we saw that yesterday. And at this league, especially when you have a team that has the talent, as we know, to go the distance, those expectations are very high. And I came out of that level of expectation in Indianapolis with the Colts.
Yep.
And so I understand, you know, the pressure that is on these coaches and these players to perform. And I think we saw the results of some of those play calling decisions, and hopefully now we can get somebody in here that's going to, I think, really utilize all of the weapons we have, because we've got a pretty amazing offense when it comes to the individual talent, and we know they can play together as a team. So we just got to see the right plays.
Yeah, and that's what's frustrating, I think, for people is they saw it early in the season. They're going, what happened to that? Now, I know every team wants to run the football if you can. Do you ever have to get to a point where you go, hey, we're just not built that way. We're trying, but we just can't do it. Or how careful do you have to be not to abandon it completely?
Yeah, you definitely don't want to abandon it completely. I mean, even when I was in the Peyton Manning offense, I mean, you know, the play action was so successful because we were also able to run the ball on a zone offense style of run, kind of like what we did with Glenn Mason with the Gophers. And I think, you know, I think we have to utilize our running backs. We've got great running backs. We've got, you know, some younger guys on the offensive line, and that, you know, that plays a role in this as well. And man, I've also played in Seattle, Mike, and it's one of the most difficult places to win a game, in the past for me. I mean, that 12th man, it's a tough place to play, but you got to have the play calling to utilize some of those talents.
To us on the outside looking in, it's easy always to question play calling, you know, when you go, why would you do that when you got it, et cetera, et cetera. Do players question it much? Is there an unwritten rule that your whole job is just to do whatever they say? Do you get into meetings and do you ever say to an offensive coach, is it common for someone to say, hey, that's not working. You got to quit trying to run the ball, on the 5-yard line. We got to do something else. Is there that kind of dialogue in the NFL, or what is it?
Yeah, there is that kind of dialogue. I mean, it's gonna manifest in different ways with different personalities. But let's be honest, I think we all understand that there's a lot of ego in the locker room, and there's a lot of guys that have the talent and the tenure, you know, to be able to call for that. I mean, I came out of a locker room with Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Joseph Addai and you know, the Edgerrin James, you know, Brandon Stokely. I mean, there were so many weapons and those guys are competitive. And so when they weren't getting the ball, especially when they were winning, against the defensive secondary, you know, they were definitely vocalizing, you know, that frustration. And I think that's probably happening, you know, behind closed doors with the Vikings. And we've seen a little bit of that chatter on the sidelines as well.
Yeah, and you know, you played with the ultimate, of course, in Peyton Manning. Kirk Cousins doesn't have that same resume, but he has accomplished a lot, and he did early in this season. Is it imperative that the quarterback get involved in that? Does he have to be the first guy that steps up and says, listen, coach, you need me and I need you, but we need this to go better? Is it paramount that the quarterback starts that conversation?
I think because of his experience, I think that he has the ability to be that type of a leader, and everything that I've read, everything that I have seen leads me to believe that he is that type of individual. You know, he's someone that if you needed to, you could tell him in his earpiece, hey, you know, take the reins on this drive, and I think he could do it. You know, so especially as he grows into this offense. But again, we talked about this, you know, now there's a new transition and so now, you know, how is the team going to handle that? What type of offense is going to be run? Obviously they're going to have to start by pulling out of what they currently have and what they've been practicing since the beginning of the year. It's not like we're going to get a whole new offense, but probably just a different focus of the plays that they, you know, already have in their arsenal.
Yeah, and you now the one thing is, you know, your quarterback coach Kevin Stefanski moves into the offensive coordinator
role.
Right. Generally speaking, these guys, as they've watched the season, they're all trying to become offensive coordinators, head coaches too. So he's probably got in his back pocket a whole bunch of plays that he'd like to run that he's been turned down on, right?
Sure. Well, and I mean, I said this today to somebody. You know, that's one of the things that excites me here is that, you know, whenever you get a quarterback coach that's jumping into that position, you know, they want to throw the ball more. And I think, you know, I think Cousins got the arm. I thought the announcers were correct yesterday when they said that in certain situations he can become tentative. But man, later on in that game yesterday, when we needed to start pushing the ball, he started taking some more risks, and you can see the arm strength. You can see, you know, the pocket presence at times. And I just want to see more of that. And I think if we get more of that consistency out of it, we've got the guys. I mean, you can't ask for more out of Diggs and Thielen and Rudolph. I mean, we've got the guys to do it. So let's get that ball in the air.
And winning would solve a lot of it, but obviously these locker rooms are, you know, an interesting place to be this time of year. And as you mentioned, everybody has a different role, but Delvin Cook, they obviously tried to feature, they must think there's something about him that he can be a great running back, huh?
Oh man, well, you know, he reminds me a lot of Joseph Addai when I was playing, a great running back out of LSU, and partially because he could catch the ball, he could run routes. I mean, I think that's one of the things that that Cook really provides is he's another receiver threat, and that's just another thing that the linebackers and safeties have to worry about when he leaves the backfield. And that's a huge upside for us to have in him as well. So, you know, if it's not handing him the ball, then let's utilize his talents as a receiver. You know, we can go empty, we can move him out to a slot receiver position, or we can get him running some underneath routes or flat routes and get the ball quick out and into his hands, because he's got the speed and he's got great vision to make people miss.
For sure. Hey, Ben, can we take a break, come back, and talk about your other love, and that's music and the holidays?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. We'll take a right-hand turn here and have some fun with it. Ben Utek joining us, talking football and, oh, yeah, his Christmas concert. Stay with us. Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. Let's change the pace just a touch. Ben Utek, of course, former NFL player, former Golden Gopher star, and a pretty darn good singer, to be sure. Ian McSterling got there every year. They do this now, and it's quite a performance they put on in so many different ways. But, Ben, you look forward to this time of year. Do you love it when it gets to be Christmas concert season?
Man, I really do, because it just, you know, it allows me to really kind of spread my wings, you know, and pursue one of those other passions that I've had for a long time, which is music. And this Christmas show, and Andy and Bing Christmas, Mike, it's so good. It's so special.
How did you guys come up with the idea to make it, to go that direction with it?
Well, I got a call a few years ago from Mick Sterling, who's a Minnesota Music Hall of Famer. I mean, this guy, you know, he hit the scene with Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers when Prince started. And I mean, if Hugh Jackman is the greatest showman of Hollywood, then Mick Sterling is the greatest showman of Minnesota. I mean, he sings everything. He's got so much experience. And so I got a call from Mick and Kate Fierro, another fantastic lead singer, female singer here in town, with this idea to do an Andy and Bing Christmas, the full Christmas albums of Andy Williams and Bing Crosby. And they asking me to, you know, to step into the shoes of Andy Williams, this iconic pop tenor from the 60s and 70s. And man, did I just fall in love with that music. And we have a 19-piece orchestra. We do about 25 songs, and it is a different level, man. It's wonderful.
How long did it take you from the time that you started doing it until you go, okay, we got that? I mean, that sounds to me like a lot of choreography.
Oh, man, it was a lot of work. The first year we debuted at Chanhassen Dinner Theaters with two shows. And then the next year that went on from two shows to about eight shows. And then the last 2 years, we've been in that 15 to 20 shows a December. I mean, it's just been fantastic to see how people have responded.
When you get together and you start working off of each other, is there a parallel to football there where you just get to know each other and you start to go, okay, I'm going to take a liberty here and he'll take one there. But once you're in the flow, it all makes sense.
It is funny you say that, you know, because there is an audible system to performing on a stage. And I said this to someone today as well, that, you know, it does feel like being part of a team again. And I think ever since I, you know, had to retire from the NFL, I've wanted to try and find my way back onto a team.
Yep.
And I didn't, you know, didn't realize that could happen through music, but that is what happened. And man, it's a great team. We performed with the Austin, Minnesota Symphony in Austin this last weekend. This is a big weekend coming up for us. We're in Rochester at the Mayo Civic Theater on Friday, two shows at the Paramount in St. Cloud on Saturday, and two more shows at the Ames Center in Burnsville with the Dakota Valley Symphony on Sunday. And so it's just it's a packed December.
Well, that Ames Center is a pretty nice place to play, isn't it?
Man, it's a wonderful place to play. And keep in mind, we've got a 19-piece orchestra. And then behind us, we have a 60-piece symphony orchestra and the Dakota Valley Symphony, all playing two of the greatest Christmas albums of all time in Andy Williams and Bing Crosby. So it truly is a special show. And man, there are not too many tickets left for those two shows, but if you can get them, I would get on to the Ames Center and pick those up as soon as possible.
And when are those again?
So the Ames Center is going to be actually this Sunday. We've got a 2 p.m. and a 7 p.m. show at the Ames Center this Sunday. And man, you don't want to miss out on an Andy and Bing Christmas with the Dakota Valley Symphony.
Who was your favorite singer growing up, or who did you admire the most when it came to Christmas music? Was it one of those two?
You know, it's so funny because when I started doing the research of Andy Williams and really, you know, listening and preparing for this show, I realized that all of those classics, and I shouldn't say all of them, but most of them, you know, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year and Mary's Little Boy Child, all these classics were Andy's voice. And I grew up listening to him, you know, through my parents and not really realizing that, you know, this is who it was. And so it's been just an honor to, you know, to be able to fill those shoes.
Oh, for sure. And like you say, you don't think about it so much when you're young. You just, you know, you just hear it and you hear your parents doing it, et cetera, et cetera. But what's the high like when you know that you've had a great performance? And maybe what's most important, is it the way you perform, or is it you get the audience at the right time and the right mindset off the right snowfall? What is it?
Oh, gosh. You know, honestly, Mike, it's the reaction on people's faces that actually came out of those generations. We've had, you know, the much older demographic, you know, because when Bing Crosby came out, you know, we're talking World War II, right? So,
sure.
You know, there have been a number of people that have come to these shows that have been out of that out of that generation, and they're reliving these songs because they haven't seen them live, you know, for 50 plus years. And they're crying, they're laughing, they're with their children and their grandchildren. And it I think what has been most special that Nick, Kate, and I wanted to achieve in building this show is that we give people a true Christmas experience, and that when they leave feeling more full of the holiday spirit than they did when they came. And I think that has been achieved.
You know, when I was a kid, I don't know if it was true when you were a kid, because they may have changed by that at that point in time. But when it got to be the Christmas season, there was just some kind of must see that the Grinch you'd always watch, Frosty right. the Snowman. But it seemed to me they did more hour long live. You know, this is Andy Williams Christmas or whoever it was, where you just sit and watch them sing for an hour, different songs, and obviously they had some theatrics to it. But it seems to me, growing up, we'd just see that. We'd see a concert on TV. I'm sure you can find it now in different cables with all the venues that we've got, but not the same way as I remembered as a kid.
No, you can't, because it doesn't really happen that way anymore. Like when you go back and watch the Andy Williams show, all of those, I mean, you've got a full symphony orchestra. Everything is live. All of the singing is live. There's no vocal like we get today. There's no, you know, most professional singers, whether it's a national anthem on television or whether it's one of the holiday parades, most of those are lip-synced performances, because it's how they make it sound perfect on television. But 40 years ago, everything was live.
Yeah,
and you had to practice until it was perfect. And we just don't see that anymore. And so it was big shoes for us to step into to make the music at that level. But we put in a lot of practice with this group, and these are the best musicians and singers in Minnesota, and it's a wonderful show.
What if you were to sing one song solo, one Christmas song solo? What would it be?
Oh, Holy Night.
No question.
No question. It's a, you know, that's kind of one of those. It's kind of one of those showstoppers, I think. I think it's, you know, I mean, you name the artist, whether it's Andrea Bocelli or Celine Dion, or the list goes on. I mean, that song just has a place in people's heart, I think, that we've experienced. But I think one of Mick's arguments would be that the most perfect song, as he says, every night we perform, the most perfect Christmas song ever performed, and I'm sure you know it because you started it at the top of the of the set, was White Christmas.
Yeah.
And you know what? I mean, you just see people put their arms around each other and hold hands. And,
do you
and
really?
Everybody ends up singing that song together as we perform it, and it's just, you know, you can't get much better than White Christmas.
Oh, Holy Night, though, when you dim the lights and you put candle lights in and you get everybody to, you know, to hold the candle, and everything else is dark in the church or the auditorium, is pretty cool.
Oh, man. And just wait, you know, if you can make it to the Ames Center this Sunday, you're going to hear that song not only with 19-piece, but a 60-piece on top of that. So 78-piece symphony orchestra doing Oh, Holy Night.
That is pretty cool. Ben, how are you doing health-wise?
I'm doing awesome.
Good.
To be honest with you. You know, I've had so much success with my cognitive brain training, and I'm probably stronger now than I've ever been. My corporate speaking career is really going good. I've got a huge passion to teach people about building a high-performing culture through the lens of a Super Bowl championship blueprint. And then the music is on the side. The one place I do need a lot of help in is how do I be a dad to four girls?
There you go.
How do I father four daughters?
And guess what? It's pretty hard to find a definitive playbook on that, isn't it?
You can get lots of ideas,
but
that playbook is constantly changing. Every single day. So,
but look at it a different way. How do you raise four blessings, right?
Oh, man.
All unique and all made. And if you believe in the divine, as you and I do, all made in God's own with his perfect purpose in mind.
Yeah, they're all daddy's girls. So I'm showered with love and affection. And
you know, as long as I learn every Disney princess song and I can sing to them, then I'm good.
All right, we're losing a little there, Ben, but thank you so much. AIM Center this week, and you can check it out anytime. I tell you, these two get together, and it's something else. Ben Utech, nice enough to join us, Sports to the Max. When we come back, who do you hold accountable for the Vikings' problems? Is this just a coaching thing? Do coaches create culture, or does great talent create great culture? See what I'm saying? 612-651-989-9226. 612-651-989-9226. Who's at fault for this problem this season? Where does the problem lie? Did they just not get enough talented players? Or is the message somehow not getting through? Do we have a communication problem here? 651-989-9226. Your thoughts on the Minnesota Vikings. Do this. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. We are joined now by a guy that I sat with last night to part of the game out in Seattle. He is a former Viking, but he's also a former Seattle Seahawk, and he is adored there like he is here. Bob Lertzema, what was it like to go back to your second home?
Well, you know, the sad part, you know, I'm playing for both teams. I wore my Seahawk jersey on the plane because I was going to come back a winner no matter what. So
good idea.
I was rooting for a tie, you know.
Well, they had one of those this year. So who knows? Well, what's your take on DeFilippo getting fired?
I think it's a great move. And the reason I say that, and a lot of you people, you know, that haven't played the game or been like what I have, and I'm not saying, Bob, it's all about you. That's not it. But coaching in the National Football League, that's 60 to 65% of the game. People don't realize the importance of that because I've been through some coaches where they played me into my weakness. They got between my ears as far as my thought process. You know, Mike,
yep.
And I was thinking before I was getting off the ball and reacting rather than go strictly on instinct. And you went through that. I mean, you've done that. Once you're comfortable with something, you don't.
It's hard to explain this to someone else when you say
Yes. You
want to get to a point where you don't think, right?
You know? Right. Yeah. And that's why I'm struggling by saying it. And see, I had 1 year with Don Shula when I was
yeah,
the
Giants,
Baltimore
yeah.
Colts. Yeah. And you know, they asked him, I'll never forget this, they asked him one time, they said, "Are you a passing coach or a running coach?" And Shula said, "I am what my players make me."
Yep.
And so many coaches, especially in the high school, they push their program while not playing to the strength of the athlete.
Yep.
And that can be the downfall, you know, of a lot of coaches. I mean, Bud was like that. I mean, we changed up all the time, let us play to our strengths. And we actually would talk to our, like Jack Pater, our line coach, and say, "Jack, we're going to fake some stunts, you know, with Eller or Marshall or whatever, and Page." And he'd go along because we were getting into a position where we could do it. We didn't have to think about it. And we could be football players because so many times they go out and say, "Just go out and be a ball player." You
yeah.
know, when they get fed up with you. But I'm gonna say it one more time: coaching in the National Football League is 60 to 65% of the action.
Let's take a couple phone calls because people have been dying to talk.
Oh
to
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
Let's go to Mike in Shakopee. Mike, you're on with Mike Max and Bob Lertzema.
Hey, good morning. Good evening, Mike and Bob. I would say, to me, last year, they just seemed, you know, Case Keenum just seemed to step up when Bradford went down and just played really well. The guy basically was a Houdini out there as far as escaping trouble and making key plays for the Vikings. And, you know, Bradford's done a good job, but I think I see a lot of that deer in the headlights look because his offensive line a lot of times isn't giving him enough time. He seems to be kind of have happy feet back there. And I think, too, Pat Shurmur was a heck of an offensive coordinator for him last year. There just seemed to be good chemistry there, which doesn't seem to be the case this year.
Mike, thanks for your call. Bob, go ahead.
Wait a minute. Is he still on the line?
Yeah, he's listening.
Okay. Well, I thought he was still on. Mike, he's on to something, too, because who was the all-time NFC, NCAA all-time total passing yardage in college?
Case Keenum.
Right. Now, there he is. He's the number one, and they said, well, he just had a freak year. Wait a minute. Last year when he was 13-3, because I don't know. I love Cousins. He's, you know, he's a wonderful kid.
Oh, and I don't think he's the problem. I think they've got him. They're in his head, just like you said.
Yeah, and Case, he was like Johnny Unitas and Raymond Berry. I mean, they would throw a pattern. They both close their eyes. They knew what they were going to do. And Case Keenum last year with Diggs and Adam, they were on the same page. And it's going to take a little time to get that same feel, the same confidence, you know, that you have with you. With players, and you, Mike, as the next quarterback.
Yeah, QB, yeah.
You should back me up, or not back me up, do your own dance, but tell the people there, too, on the thought process. Because as a defensive lineman, it's real. I mean, when you're reading your guard, center, and tackle, you know, you don't wait, read them, and then react. I mean, you react and read on the run. And some players cannot do that if they're thinking too much.
No, that's right. And when a quarterback's got it right, you just it's boom, boom, boom. And I don't think this is. I would go to Cousins right now, and I'd bring him into the meeting room, and I'd say, Kirk, what do you want to do? Don't ask. You don't ask us what to do. You tell us what you want to do. And I try to design it around him because I think he's got a better feel than the coaches do right now. Let's go to Milt in Eden Prairie. Milt, you're on with Bob Lernsema.
Yeah, it's Milt in Atlanta and Eden Prairie.
Okay, boss, we'll take you.
The Bison stuff, you know, when the magazine.
Yep.
But I just wanted to tell you that Easton Stick, the guy from North Dakota State.
Quarterback.
He's going to be the next Patrick Mahomes, and you mark my words on that. He plays under a pro system, and if you haven't watched a few of his tapes or YouTube stuff, you know, you need to get on it. I also have a new moniker for you, Mike.
Yeah.
You're Mad Mike Beyond Thunderdome instead of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
All right. We'll take both of them, Lurtzy, right?
On the radio, call you back, bye.
Oh. Yep. You there, Lurtzy?
Yeah. Yeah, no, somebody called the other line.
Yeah, we heard the tail end of that.
We do another gig, but yeah.
So, but you know what? The other part, Bob, I want your comment on. But people say, well, they rushed, Seattle rushed for all these yards last night. I don't care. I thought the defense played really well. They gave the, you know, 3 points in the first half. They basically gave 14. The offense gave them the other one. I don't care how many they rushed for, passed for, if you don't let them in the end zone. I thought the defense played well last night. Did you think they played well or not?
Yes, I did. And, of course, people look at the stats because your goal as a defensive player is to keep the opposing offensive team under 100 yards for the game.
I get that.
And 100, no, yeah, but then 150 for passing. So people have misinterpreted the stat part because of the amount of yardage that they put up in the first half. But even in that first half, they gave our offense opportunity. Here, Seattle was saying, here, Vikings, take this game. You know, we're going to give it to you. You know, with that interception before they had all these different things they were doing, and our offense did not capitalize on it, and the defense put them in a position to, just like what you said, you know, to win the game. But no, you know, on the plane, the defensive players, they did not feel bad, and with just reason not to feel bad.
I agree. Let's go to Omar in St. Paul. Omar, oh my, you're on with Bob Lertzema.
Hey, Bob, love your stuff from back in the day on Vikings update.
Well, thank you, Omar. Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm going to be real advanced with this and be quick. Basically, with DeFilippo and what's been going on, DeFilippo was supposed to have brought a version of the West Coast offense that Shermer was running and that everybody was running in Philadelphia. Shermer came from Philadelphia. Philadelphia won a Super Bowl running this short passing scheme and multiple personnel. The idea behind that West Coast offense was that it had tenths of what the guy who's in Carolina now that we used to have as a coordinator.
North Turner.
Turner.
Yeah. It was Turner in Cleveland. Turner and Shermer worked together. They came up with a hybrid system, kind of like Denny Green did. But my thing is with Cousins, he came in using the Shanahan system of the West Coast offense, and then he went to the Tampa Bay system, which was the guy Gruden. Gruden's version, which is his brother's version, a lot of tight ends and running backs. Don't you think it'd be better? We've been doing a lot of Thielen digs. It doesn't look like a lot of West Coast. What do you guys think about us going back to a more West Coast scheme for Cousins? I'll hang up and listen.
Bob?
You know, he has a lot of substance there, Mike, because there's so many times there's so much predictability that you and I were sitting up there. They're going to run this way or run that way.
Yeah, they were determined last night to try to say, hey, we're going to line it up and shove it down your throat a few times, and they just weren't good enough.
Correct. And then, like on that fourth down, that one fourth down play, I think we lost the yard. I mean, for gosh sakes, you know, and they can blame the offensive line, this and that, but no. You know, when you dig in on a situation like that, but as an offense, you should be able to do it. But now on the defensive part of the position, like I mentioned once before, being a defensive lineman, I knew where you were going to run the ball. And when I can do that, boy, I don't have to play the defense even. I can play the play. And if you watched last night, there were so many times that they would slant toward. In other words, if the Vikings ran to the right, the defense would slant to the left, which is obviously towards the play. And the predictability that came up there surprised me that the defensive calls were such that they almost went to where we were running.
And I get it. You want to be, you know, man, this is man's game. Let's line it up. Let's play. I'm just not so sure that offensive line is built that way. Are you?
No, they're not. They're a lot more finesse. And as far as, you know, a lot of times they'll get a second block that, you know, they slide off and whatnot. But when they do have the stance, they're opening up too much of the inside or the outside as far as a pass rush goes or how a defensive lineman can take their shoulders. And I know that sounds pretty simple. I hope people out there are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, it's over my head or not. But no, you can put yourself in the position where you can actually save a half a step, knowing, you know, whether you're slanting or what the situation is or whether the tackle's been giving you the...
And a half a step's big in the NFL, isn't it?
Oh, that's all you're fighting for, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to say...
You fight for those inches, that great speech given in that by Al Pacino, man. You're fighting for just an inch here and an inch there every play.
Yeah. You know, my goal in life always was to sack you.
I know. I never gave you that opportunity because I was much younger. So okay, we got three. There's three games left for the Vikings here, and kind of toss ups. I think they'll play Chicago when Chicago can rest.
That could be the whole. Yeah, the last game.
Yeah, Detroit will be at Detroit, which, you know, I mean, they're not great, but they're at home they got a chance. And then Miami's had the miracle play, etc. What will we see? Radical. My guess is Stefanski's going to throw some wrinkles in that we have not seen all year that he's wanted to run as the coordinator. What do you think?
Yes, you know that, and that is so smart because if you notice like what Brady and Belichick do, then they might start off slow, but then all of a sudden you're laying down four or five games that they can go against.
Yep.
Well, the same thing with a good coordinator like that in Miami. He can see, you know, some of the things that we're doing, and then he can throw in what we call bastard plays, you know.
Yeah.
Double, triple, zip, or reverse, or, you know, throw a pass backwards, or, you know, whatever it might be. And that gives them an opportunity to do that. And the ones that are very creative, you know, on a few plays, really, really puts the pressure on the defense, especially the defensive line, because we start thinking.
Yeah, don't do that to Lurchie, we always used to say.
Don't get me thinking, boy.
I thought of another one last night when you and I and Eric Nellis were sitting down. Kevin Williams. We were talking about, for whatever reason, the vast number of Minnesota Vikings defensive linemen that have also played for the Seattle Seahawks. They got Stefan now as well there. But Bob Lurchie, Doug Sutherland, Carl Eller, John Randall. I forgot about Kevin Williams.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot, you know, like Jack Patera, God bless him, he coached me 9 of my 12 years. Well, he was a defensive line coach, of course, with Minnesota, and he had the Purple People years. But also he had the Rams and the Fearsome Foursome. He coached that before he went to New York. Then he was 5 years with New York, then he went to Minnesota. I mean, that's how I followed him. But he liked our attitude because, if you know, each player that you mentioned, we didn't make mental mistakes, okay? And you're going to get your butt, you know, kicked you know, at least quite a few times during a game. But the nice part of the defensive line and working with Jack Batira was that each play was like a new game. In other words, you forget the last play. You know the formation and stuff. Now you're going to say, all right, now can I win this next battle?
Yep.
And that's the fun part. And people listening out there, a lot of times in your workplace, you love what you're doing, but you're really only graded quarterly or monthly.
Right.
Where the fun part of playing a National Football League is that, hey, you can grade yourself, you know, not only.
Boy, can you.
Yeah. I almost made 20% one time. But, no, that's the neat part because
yeah.
you can regroup. You can make a mistake, and you can correct it within a minute or two, where in the real world you make a mistake sometimes, and to dig out of your hole, it's going to take you a week or two.
Yeah. Lurtzy, great to be with you in Seattle. Great to visit with you tonight, buddy.
It's awesome. And the two people that are listening, you know, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, and they both hung up after we answered their question, so it's just you and I now, buddy. Thanks, Lurtzy.
I love it. You know that. Take
you care. Too, buddy. Right. I love Bob Lurtzy. I'm going to take a break, come back. Stay. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Christmas music, 8 o'clock hour exclusive, okay? Jonathan, you with me, big guy? Oh, boy. I always feel like I'm out of sorts when I get back. This is my first time in Seattle. It was cold and rainy. It was kind of cool. And downtown Seattle is a little bit like downtown Minneapolis. And that's where we were staying and walk around. And I don't know how many times this happens to not just me, but others. This morning I get up. I kept myself in Minnesota time, so it was like 6 a.m. Seattle time. And I'm having breakfast at the hotel there before we go to the airport. And you know, it's pitch dark outside. And I walk up to pay at the end of the hostess stand. And at that very moment, a lady walks up. And I look at her, and she looks at me, and I go, is that really? And it's one of our friends from Eden Prairie that a mother to one of my daughter's friends, and she wasn't there for the Viking game. That's what makes it, you know, would be, if you see people that are there for the Viking game, that's one thing, but this just happens to be somebody that lives a mile away, and at 6 a.m, she's walking into the same restaurant at exactly the time I'm walking out, and it's just freaky when you run into somebody like that. And she was there. She works for a company. She's meeting with Amazon. She does her company does some work for Amazon. But it's just weird. Take a break. Come back. A lot of fun. Plenty more with Coach Stiegemeyer from South Dakota State. We come back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.